For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, anybody with any interest in the knife making process or about knives. This is for definitely for knife reviewers. And my name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm with Chop Knives' own Craig Lockwood, and our main man, Mareko Mamasi, is not here this week. We had to do some scheduling thing, and he is sorry he couldn't make it, but he will be back next week. But it's me and Craig today. Craig, how the hell are you?
I'm good. Tired. I got back to France. Well, got back to the house about half an hour ago. So yeah, quick hug with the kids, give them presents and so on. And yeah, straight back on it.
Wow. But good. Dedicated. Yeah,
it was a whirlwind 2 days in London, where it was just my wife and I. We ate too much. We drank too much. We stayed up too late. We walked a million miles. It was really good. It was a different side of London we'd normally stay in, so it was good. It was all good.
And were you there for any reason or
to watch a gig? A comedian. It was good, actually. It was good. It was in a big arena, like 25,000 people, I think. To see a comedian in that, you just think, how are you going to do stand up in a massive place? But he did it really well, and there were songs going on and all. It was good. It was good.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, You had a nice romantic weekend.
I wouldn't say romantic. It was just, it was indulgent in every sense. Yeah, we really went. We were determined that we wanted to taste the world, so we were going to eat little and often. So every sort of 2 hours, we'd grab something small and a drink somewhere, and it was good.
What was the really best thing you ate?
Some sticky pork belly, the buns, fluffy buns with a sticky pork belly, and it was beautiful. And then it's just like, oh, and it's just like, I want more. And I was like, no, because if we do that, we won't be able to eat more later. We really did eat nonstop. It was great.
What was the worst thing you had?
The worst thing. Oh, it's going to sound terrible now, but it was a takeaway pizza. So where we were staying, we stayed in this amazing place in London called Little Venice, which is just outside London, and it's quite sort of posh around there and so on. But we had an apartment which was above an Indian restaurant, but it's like this really high-end, like, cocktail bar Indian restaurant thing.
Right.
And we were above it. So in my mind, it was like, when we go back, we need to get something from there when we go back to the apartment later tonight. Get back to the apartment, and it was... they weren't serving anymore. And I was like, but in your head, you're like, you're not hungry, but you've got something in your head, I need to eat now because I've worked up for this kind of thing. So we look on, you get the apps out to see what's delivering, and there's only Pizza Express, which is a big delivery chain over here, delivering. And I was just like, I'm not hungry, but I've got to have something just to satisfy my brain now. Ordered it, and it was the worst. It was like, it was all burned on the base, and cold. It was terrible. Terrible, terrible. But we made up for it with really good stuff. So, I'm good. I'm happy.
Wow. That sounds great. Except for the pizza.
Yeah, except for the pizza. And also the issue we had. So we didn't fly from Heathrow. We flew from Stansted back to France. But Heathrow Airport, there's a big outage today. So they've had to close the whole airport for the whole day. So that impacted us slightly because we got so much busier at the other London airports.
I heard about that this morning, and they were talking about it on the radio. It was enough that it was like such a big deal that it really kind of screwed up a lot. It's a huge hub in Europe, right?
Well, it's the biggest airport in London, Heathrow.
Yeah, but also it's a hub in Europe, so like people going across the United States a lot of
times. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, people land there and they get off to other places. But, you know, it was the whole area. So I think it was like 7,000 houses, you know, all affected as well. I think it was a fire in like an electricity substation, so there was no power at all. So, yeah, but to close an airport for 24 hours, it's a big deal, you know?
I heard some report that an airplane that was flying from like Nebraska and said instead of going to they had to divert to Paris.
Right.
So it's just like what the fuck? I mean, it's a totally different.
It's another country. Madness. But yeah, no, all good, all good. So what's been going on with you?
Well, last week we were talking. You know, it's funny. On this podcast, we do a lot.
I shall be the judge of that.
All right, good, good. So one of our listeners is a knife reviewer. His name is Kitchen Guy. Is a kitchen knife guy, Frankie. Yeah. And we've been having great. You know what? He's a good dude. I like what he's doing because he's got a good sense of humor. So we've been kind of busting balls about knife reviewers, and I say that my biggest problem with knife reviewers is, and I'm getting to a real story. So I'm really happy because he did a little reel. If you go to Knife Talk Podcast Instagram, he did a very funny little kind of skit on the knife reviewer that I created, which is this guy who doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And the whole thing is he's got a great sense of humor. He's a great guy. He's actually sent us some really good questions and stuff like that. And I have nothing but respect for Frankie. Frankie's terrific. And the reason why it's so funny is because I was asked to be in an article. I'm not even going to talk about the article. And it was supposed to be for a reviewer. And I had just gone on 3 weeks of saying that reviewers don't know what the fuck they're talking about, you know? And I said, the problem is when they start to like, they're influencing people good or bad, but if they don't know what they're talking about, it's just like a poor, I feel like it's a poor baseline for people getting the information if they don't know what they're talking about. So Frankie's been doing a good job, and he's been kind of interacting with us. And he's got a great sense of humor, and I'm all in with him. So I found out that I was in this article, and then I read the article, and it was like...
Is this an online thing?
Just don't say the name. Yes, don't say the name. Okay. Don't say anything. Don't say anything about anything. Just listen, and just don't even dig into it. It was great if you're not a knife maker or if you're not have any interest in the making process of it. But the words the guy was using was like, I was like, oh my God. It was as if I had conjured up this exact same thing that I had said about, you know, to Frankie and everybody else. Knife reviewers don't know what they're fucking talking about. Mm. And then three episodes of that, and then I'm automatically I manifested this to happen. So it's good. And my business partner's like, look, don't worry about it. You know, you're for the rest of our lives, if you get an article written about you, it's not going to be the way you want it. And it was funny because I was just thinking to myself, I was just like, I thought I was exaggerating on, you know, knife reviewers not knowing anything. And some of the things that this guy said, God bless him, and sell some knives if you're listening to this. God bless you. I mean, it was just like fucking stupid. And I was like slightly embarrassed. My wife said, it's just good. It's good. It's good. I'm just like, yeah, you've never made a knife. You don't know you don't know any terminology. You don't know any of this stuff. But it was hilarious just because I'm just like, I manifested this to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I won't dig into where it was and who it was, but was the proposed end reader meant to be knife makers or were they general?
No, no. Well, see, that's the good thing.
It's all good.
Yeah, so hopefully that's the good part.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, that's the interesting thing too is like, you know, when we think about who our target audience is with social media or with the newspapers, our customers generally aren't going to be, I'll speak for myself. My customers generally aren't going to be collectors unless they listen to this podcast and they just want to kind of a piece of something that I've done. That's different. But like Mareko gets collectors. He's got a secondary market. I don't have a secondary market. I don't have collectors and I'm fine with that. So the viewer who reads these Fakakta articles hopefully are just like, wow, that sounds great. Let me buy the knife. But like if a knife reviewer or not knife connoisseur reads it, they're going to think, Jeff let this go out. You know, it's because it's like so baloney.
Yeah. Look, I read it. I know what you mean. I've read it. And it's, it, I mean, for the end user, it's perfect.
It's for the end user if it's perfect. It's snappy, but I mean, am I wrong?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I know what you mean. They dumb down. Yeah, but that's, you know, that's fine. That's fine.
Half Tang?
Jeff and the Half Tang.
Jeff and the Half Tang.
The Half Tang clan.
The Half Tang clan. There you go.
Half Tang clan.
Half
there
the
we
job's
go.
Done. 9 minutes. Yeah, you're already done. I mean,
woo-ha.
I mean, it's just like, and so I guess what I'm saying is to knife reviewers who are listening to this podcast, take a class and learn the stuff. Because you're not going to be a NARP. You know what I'm saying? You know what a NARP is?
NARP. No,
a NARP. A NARP. This is so great. I love sports radio, right? I love it because I love the broadcasting aspect. In a lot of these sports radio stations, they'll have ex-professional athletes. And then you'll have a broadcaster who's generally fat and lazy and never played a sport in their life, but they've got a great broadcasting voice and maybe they'll like sports, but then they'll be super duper critical of a team. Yeah. And then what will happen is the professional athlete will get irritated that this fat slob who's never done anything before has an opinion. They'll refer to them as a NARP. So in college sports, a NARP is a non-athletic regular person. They use that expression in college sports referring to, you know, at student athletes and not student athletes. So NARP. So every so often you'll hear a sports radio guy saying, I'm not listening. You know, you have some opinion. You know, you're just a NARP. So I wish there was a NARP equivalent in the knife making world we should find out a NARP related word for people who talk a good game, but never been in the game. And, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I like Frankie. Frankie is a good dude. I'm kitchen knife guy. I'm with you. I want you to take a class because I have a higher opinion and aspirations for you. That's a compliment. For me, that's a compliment.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a challenge for the listeners then. Name for those people with opinions, particularly about knife making.
Who don't know how to make anything.
Yeah.
But, and then the last but not least is, and I'm going to be very real here. And I don't know if this is for everybody. I'm going to speak for myself. March has not been good. And, you know, February wasn't great. January is okay. February wasn't great. And March is not great. And we're just trying to, you know, there were rattling cages and we're trying to do all these things. And some things are working, some things aren't working. And we're just like, you know, I'm in this position where a part of me feels as though we have a PR company that's working for us, but like it just doesn't. I mean, we're in a kind of like this. I always end up feeling like when it comes down to it, it's all up to me. So I'll post stuff and some things work and some things don't work. And I was just like, I just need to be consistent. So I did a pizza video. I did a pizza video and it went great in terms of like sending out and views and what. Yeah. And it was interesting because I did an Instagram live and somebody was asking me what I thought about how Instagram affects knife people. And what I basically said was, listen, I don't listen to that shit anymore. I don't care about that shit anymore. I've been getting good views and good follows because I've been collaborating with my man, Bob, every day's feast day. And I've been doing these things that are compelling enough that people are compelled enough to send it and share it. You know, just... They gotta. You can't count on Instagram to be daddy.
Yeah, daddy. Particularly if you want to reach a new audience. Yeah, you're right.
It's not daddy. A lot of guys were complaining about Instagram not recommending you. You don't look for daddy. You know, you're your own fucking grandpa. Great, whatever. You're your own dad.
Sort of works. That
you're your own dad. You're not. You don't need daddy anymore.
Who's the daddy? You are the dad. Yeah.
You don't need the daddy anymore. And so I was like, I was getting so many messages about I'm doing it wrong, and it was a complaint. People were like in my shit, and I realized that. And I was talking to Honor Kaglar, Dies in Every Film. And I was talking to Chris Powell of Full Steam Designs. These guys fight people online. You know, they like to,
yeah.
They get a comment and they fight them. And I said to, I was saying to Honor, I said, the crazy thing is you start to realize when you have what people refer to as trolls or something like that, it isn't a bad thing. It means it's people are looking what you're doing. And yeah, we came to the conclusion that it's the saddest state of affairs that a real that gets good reviews. You'll know if it gets good reviews if you start to get assholes in the comments. It's this sad state of affairs that assholes dictate whether or not it's a good reel or not.
Yeah. And also, I mean, any engagement, good or bad, is good for your,
yeah,
your sort of for the algorithm, you know?
They it's don't pathetic. Know.
Yeah, yeah. It's all good.
So when people are dicks to you, you got to be like, success. This is he and I were talking about this.
Badge of honor.
It's the most pathetic litmus test for success.
Yeah.
So there we go.
But I mean, who goes online to be a dick to other people? Dicks. Oh,
dude,
you know?
It is the strangest mindset. Yeah. Well, now here's the thing with Honor and Chris is they drive up their engagement when they go after him.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Honor, he's the king of this, and he uses it as extra content. Like he'll post it in his videos and he'll put it in his reels and he'll. So somebody will say something to him and he says, "You're a pedophile." Or, I mean, oh, you know, you'll go say, he'll just go right crazy. Okay. Just, oh, you like dogs? Yeah. You sniff dogs' butts. He'll just go fucking wild.
Yeah,
and he, geez. There's no like mid ground. Because the more they interact, the more his reels do well. And it's like, so I said to Chris, I said, I don't know how you do it. I can't get involved with this. He's like, well, the money helps. So every time with him, he gets these people and he'll reel them in. It's like fishing. It's like fishing, you know?
Yeah.
They'll bite the hook and then he'll reel them in. He gets paid. He gets paid for interactions. Hmm. So he's like specifically being a complete piece of shit to people because it's like, once again, it's
for
money.
It's compelling and people are going to read comments, read more comments. And that, yeah, yeah, it's compelling.
Oh.
Yes, yeah.
I hate it.
That's the game you're in.
Unfortunately.
Should we do some questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, before we do.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
You know what? I've just opened up my Evenheat. I've literally just got back within half an hour. I was excited to run back to my Evenheat. Because, and I mean, I know this is a knife making podcast. We put some pottery in there.
No,
we did our first fires. We had this big batch of pottery we've been doing. My wife and I just playing around, just messing about, and and none of it's cracked. It's all come out great.
Hey. So
it's like yes, it's a success.
Congratulations, Evenheat. You've done it again.
You've done it again. Exactly. Right, questions. We get them. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got a question for us, please send them in. And we're looking for audio questions as well. So use your voice. Well, I think you can do it directly on Instagram now, can you?
Yes, you can send directly on in your DMs. You can send us an audio message. And funny enough, the only people who send me personally audio messages are other podcasters. And it's like part of me is just like, you want me to listen to your mediocre podcast?
They love their voices.
They love their voices. And I'm not saying one. I'm saying a lot. I'm saying like more than four podcast hosts send me voice messages.
But do they do it as in, hi, this is X from XYZ Podcast? Because they're looking for
in love with their voice. It is I mean, it's like, hey, what's going on? This is sponsored by Evenheat. I mean, this voicemail message is sponsored by whoever. But part of me wants to write, I don't want to listen to your podcast. Why are you inflicting me with your voice anyway? I mean, I wish I were joking. Right now I can think of 2, 3, 4, 5 podcast people who are insistent on sending me voicemail messages. And I'm like, stop holding me hostage. I don't want to listen to your podcast, number one. And I certainly don't want to have to listen to a personal one. What am I, in your Patreons?
Oh, Jesus. Like friends who like using WhatsApp and they send audio messages rather than type it. I'm just like, oh my God, I hate it. I won't even listen to them now. I'm just like, whatever.
I told one guy, I'm like, I'm not listening to your podcast. I'm not going to listen to your audio message either. I mean, it's like, so what do you do? When you're speaking the audio message as a normal conversation to someone, are you thinking about how you sound? Or I don't want to hear the ums and the ahs. Just write it down.
Yeah. And keep them short. If you send questions in, keep them short.
Yep.
And do you know who has Coldstream Custom Knives? Not an audio message, but you did type. G'day, guys. I'm reasonably new to the craft, and I'm struggling with one aspect in particular. When grinding my bevels to my scribe lines, I find myself constantly chasing my scribes on either side and always seem to get higher and higher towards the spine. Any tips would be greatly appreciated. Love the show.
That's like those jokes when the guy's trying to trim his sideburns and he ends up...
He goes all the way up the side of the head. Any tips, Jeff? I've got a couple of ideas.
Back to jigs. We had a nice conversation last week about jigs. Is sometimes, like, I'm just going to assume that this is like a bushcraft knife. Sometimes if you grind... I don't like grinding all the way on one side.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I'd on a jig. Like, yeah. I like to go back and forth because it allows you to not to really dial in where your center line is. But the other thing is if you grind the first side all the way, sometimes because of the heat, sometimes because of the way you grind, it'll warp a little bit on the jig, which is okay because when you do it the other side, usually it comes right back. But if you get to the other side, what happens is if there's a distal tape or anything, you're not at the same access as the first side, because if you have any taper, when you push the second side into the platen, and stop me if you don't understand, you almost push it in and change the angle a little bit.
Yeah.
So I am a fan of roughing it in with the jig, but I also really go out of my way to try to stay away, and that's one of the reasons why I freehand it, because it allows me to grind, you know, a couple swipes on one side, couple swipes on the other side, and you get comfortable. I think the most important thing is, and we talk about this a lot, is everything is hard and it takes a long time. So practice. But I would suggest that you not, if you're using a jig, especially if you're starting out, try to not go all the way to final on the first side you're on the jig.
Yeah. And I'd say the opposite, actually, to what you just said. But starting on a jig and then going in to freehand it. I don't see many others making knives, to be honest with you, because I'm pretty much in my own little bubble here. But, I mean, certainly what I used to do was I'd use Pythagoras and I'd work out the angle and I'd set everything to the angle and I'd be, you know. So the angle that I'm grinding to, I'd take it back and take it back, take it back until I got to that scribe line.
Right.
I think what I prefer to do is take out a more of an obtuse angle to begin with, so you're not doing that full sort of bevel.
Oh yeah.
You know, so first of all, I'd rough it in first. So you're taking some out. So when you do come to sort of finishing your bevels and making sure you're as close as you can to a scribe line or whatever you want to use, you're not actually taking out that full width of the. It's quite hard to explain what
I'm
saying.
Yeah, this is tricky. It's hard to explain.
It's hard to explain. Yeah. But yeah, take some meat out first.
Right.
So then when you go into your scribe line, basically you're just taking the tiniest bits off each time then. You're not having to hog all the way down to your scribe line, one side, then the other side. Then, okay, now I need to polish these and make them look good. And you do that and your scribe line goes up and you go to the other side and it goes up. And you can see how you're always chasing your tail.
Right.
So take out some of that beef first of all.
So are you saying basically two different angles?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
So the first angle kind of roughs it in, and the second one feathers from the
edge, break a 45, so we're never doing a sharp edge, but just a lot more than that, you know? So then when you're sort of finishing is when you're riding up to that scribe line, then you're not actually just going roughing into your scribe line because you've still got your finishing to do.
And that's another point that I learned from fabrication is when you, let's just say if you're welding two railings together and when you're trying to splice the weld, you don't go all the way with the most coarse thing. You go 75% and then you drop back to something, you know, finer, and then do a 75. And by the time you're done, then you have a flat, and then you'll end up with something a little bit more even. Now, in terms of for grinding, I usually go 36 grit, maybe I would say 80% of the way, and then I'll drop down, Because what you don't want to do is, and the other problem with scribe lines on the scribe, I'm assuming this, he's referring to the scribe lines on the side of the knife where he wants to stop the bevel.
Like yeah, if
you
I want, think so.
Like
yeah.
almost like a yeah. Scandi grind if you want to keep the tops flat and stuff like that. You really want to go, you don't want to go up to that line. You want to kind of end at that line. So the last belt you go at touches that line. I think if you back off a hair, in terms of like starting, you know, do 75% at your coarsest and then a little bit more and then a little bit more. And then I think that you'll have a better time if you not necessarily do one side and then the second. Especially if you're starting out, do a little bit on one side, then do a little bit on the other. Do a little bit on one side and do a little bit on the other. And then you're going to come up with a method that might make things easier. And once again, this just is about repetition and figuring out what works best for you, and just enjoy the fact that you're going to get better. The next one will get better.
Yeah, yeah. And good lighting too.
Yeah.
Get yourself some of those magnetic clip lights so you can really see as you're going what you're doing. Because quite often people have an overhead light, but then you bend over the light and you're casting a shadow everywhere. So yeah, they're only cheap on Amazon or wherever you want. We're not allowed to say. Remember that time we mentioned Amazon and we had lots of people writing in.
That was in the beginning. That was in the beginning days.
That was years ago.
That was in the beginning days, and frankly, they were right. You know, that's the best part. We had talked about Amazon, and somebody wrote us how we shouldn't be talking about them because we're small businesses using other small businesses, and we're like, don't worry about that. Motherfucker was right. It was like a genie in the lamp. The guys, you know, gave us the aura and the Oracle.
Yeah. So, yeah, but good lighting helps a lot. So yeah, make sure you get some good lighting to help.
Yeah, good lighting does help, but also slowing down. I think that people get the idea that when you're grinding, you're just fucking grinding. And you got to like back off a hair every so often. You got to take a look. It's not easy. Like I had that same problem actually, funny enough, when years ago we had a build along and you designed a knife and we did a build along. And I had the same goddamn thing happen. I was going one side and one side was higher, one side was higher. And I went back and forth. And it was like the sideburns going up the side of the hair. So I know exactly what this dude's
saying. So it's a full flat at the end.
Well, I had maybe like an eighth of an inch or something like that. It's like, but at the same time, it's like, this is not abnormal. The next one comes from our friend Hutch Made Knives. Hutch Made Knives is a good dude. He says, "Hey guys, I got a gripe. I've been working for another knife maker full time for the past couple of years, and I finally decided to go out on my own this year. As I make this transition, I have people sliding into my comments telling me that my work is priced too high and that it's overpriced, it's too expensive, etc. My question for you is, number one, do you think my work is overpriced? If you get a chance, check out my work. and let me know if I'm way off. I'm trying to situate myself on the low end of custom knife market in an effort to move product. And I thought that I was, but here I have a couple people complaining. What gives? Number two, what do I do about these goofballs in my comments? Should I address it or just ignore it? I'm tempting to call them out, but I feel like I'm getting trolled. Maybe it's best to just ignore. Anyway, any insight would be appreciated, Hutch. Now, I looked at his prices, and his prices are beyond fine. His prices are, and I'm not saying like I'm not giving him, his prices are very fair, if that means anything. So he's like sub $300 for some of his knives, which I think is very fair. And he's I looked at his thing. Once one guy writes, "Oh, these are too expensive," IMO, you know, like that bullshit thing that these people say. So what do you think?
Pricing is always a difficult one because I think it relies on more than just what you're making. It relies on reputation. It relies on locality where you are. It relies on, you know, your following. And it's supply and demand. If people are willing to pay that and you think that's a fair price, well, then that's the price. You know, I don't think you could take two knives that are built the same way by different makers and price them the same, because unfortunately that's just not the way the world works anymore, you know. And we all work hard to sort of, you know, sell our story, as you know, with our knives and all the rest of it. And there is value to, there's huge value to that. There's huge. But with regards to people commented saying, you know, your price is all off, that's, I mean, again, we're back to dicks on the internet, you know. What they're saying is that they don't want to pay that amount for a knife. It doesn't mean that, you know, the rest of the world doesn't. And it's always going to be that tiny minority of people who are going to speak, who are going to shout the loudest. But yeah, it is a difficult one. I think, yeah, pricing, it's easy to say it's supply and demand. If you can get a great price for it, we're able to keep selling at that price. But also, you know, you want to give value as well. So, you know, if let's say you can get $5,000 for a knife, doesn't mean you should necessarily sell that if you personally don't think the value is worth that. So you need to, you know, make sure you're being fair with everybody. But I think everything will sort of work itself out in the wash with regards to pricing. You'll find that sort of sweet spot that works for you. But certainly don't let the commenters tell you how to run your business. That's ridiculous.
I wish Mareko was here, because it always is good, because we're all three of us are kind of different. Our businesses are different, and we have different attitudes towards it. And obviously, he makes knives that are far, you know, very exquisite, and they're far more expensive, and they're worth every penny. And he's got a different client base.
A hell of a lot of time to make.
And he's got a different client base, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that it's funny because we're constantly working under the idea of. You know, our pricing changes. Right now we have a 10% off sale for March, just to kind of get, you know, something kicked up. Yeah. It took me a long time to not nickel and dime everything and start to think about sales coming in as opposed to, you know, what something costs. I mean, sometimes, you know, we've sent a lot of knives out as promotional items, and I really try not to nickel and dime it. And I think about what's coming in versus, you know, adding up every individual knife. So I think that when you start to do that, I think it takes time and time with your business to kind of start to see what's going on. Now, I looked at your prices and I had zero problem. And I had zero problem. And I also looked at what those people said. The person, and I'm going to say this knowing that this person is probably not listening to this. These are older people who don't understand when they say certain things, how they're perceived. My opinion is I don't think that this is a troll. I think this is somebody who probably just recently found social media, looked like an older gentleman. and I think that they just think that they're talking to you in like a direct message. I think that trolls don't normally say stuff like "this is too expensive," in my opinion. Usually they say something kind of nastier. I think that this is just a well-intentioned moron That's what I think. This is a well-intentioned idiot. And I don't think that this was meant to be. What I would do would be just take their comment off. Because you can erase people's comments. You can just delete it. So what I would do would be like, hey, but you know, you're not helping me here. You know, I wouldn't even say anything to the guy. I would just get the comment off and mute them or restrict them from seeing you, you know? And then, you know, because it isn't helpful when people who I believe that this person or some of these people were well intentioned, but I don't think that they realize that when they put their comments on your page, it isn't helpful to you because other people see, and then they'll be like, yeah, maybe it is overpriced. So I would erase it. I would just cough it up to this is not a person being mean. I think this is just a dope. And I don't think they're, I think that they're not, I think their intentions are to try to help you, but I don't think they realize how things come across. That's what really happens on the internet these days. People say things like we talk about that. Hillary thinks, my wife thinks I'm crazy. I'm on this community Facebook page. I don't write a thing. I am Mr. Not Pro. I don't want to have any problems.
Yeah.
And somebody will say, terrible. Have you been to this restaurant? And then everyone will say, oh, it was just okay. And I've had better. And the next guy says, I had a bad experience there. And it turns into this total slamming of this restaurant. And it's so, and then they wonder why business is bad in the area because you know you see these things and you're just like you're not helping anybody,
yeah,
you know, and the people they know, people in our area, and it's just like you're saying these things they don't mean. I had years ago I went to my daughter in high school had a thing and the principal came up to me. She goes, I went to your website. Your knives are so beautiful. They're way too expensive for me, but they're very beautiful. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to do? What do you want me to do?
All I can say is that it's not for everybody.
Obviously I groaned something or I murmured something. I was like, all right, well, there you go. You know, but people say things they don't realize how stupid they sound or how it can, you know, affect your either mental health or your business. So I would just cut them loose. I would erase them off your page just because it's just like you're not helping anybody. But
and I think a lot of these are the squares in a 9-to-5 job,
right.
Probably hate their own job, but not realizing that, you know, people who do make stuff particularly for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just a job. It's what you do. It's how you identify it. It's everything, you know? So, fuck the squares.
they think that you're just playing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't realize that what you're, and I think that that's something that we as knife makers should really think about the fact that how are we being perceived? Now, I did a couple foolish reels just because I need to get the ball rolling here. I need to shake some trees. But at the same time, I mean, I think that you should really consider yourself being a real, you know, a serious business person and think about your business as opposed to the knife making aspect. I saw this guy's knives look great. He's on the way. He's doing his thing. You're going to get better over time, and you have to understand that. And you should start to think about your business. And then, is this guy helpful or not? Get rid of him.
That's cool. Okay. I just want to tell people about. Where should we go? Tormek.
Oh.
Tormek sharpening machines. I've got one. Jeff's got, what would we count? 5 or 6?
Yeah, 5.
It's ridiculous. but if you're making knives for other people and you want that to be sort of repeatable, which is, I think, is what we all want, really. Repeatable edges, repeatable, you know. Yeah. Tormek is what you want to be using. not that expensive, but you can, you know, you can change out the wheels. They've got different grits as well, some of the Japanese wheels, lots of different models, and it's just gonna make things easy for you. If you're a jig man or a jig lady, you can use them with jigs. You can use them freehand. Use them how you want to use them. But what they will give you is a repeatable edge each time. So yeah, Tormek sharpening machines. If you haven't got one, go get one.
And they're definitely going to be a blade show, so you should definitely go by. My man Sebastian's going to be there, and you go say hello. And Carl from New York, from United States, is going to be on full blast pretty soon. So I love those guys. I love their customer service, and I couldn't. I have nothing but just really appreciation for that company. So
yeah, I agree. Okay, we got more questions. Jamie Harris, question for the podcast. I'm heading to my first show, the Toronto Knife Show, on the 26th of April. My question is about flying with a bunch of knives. I understand that they'll need to be in a checked bag, but what's the best way to prevent bag loss or bag tampering? I plan to have an air tag on the bag, but should I padlock the bag and zip ties or whatever? It would be sort of shitty to get to a show and not have your bag arrive in time. So I don't know where Jamie's from, but he's flying into Toronto. I mean, I fly a hell of a lot. I mean, I don't fly with knives, but I fly a hell of a lot. And I've never, ever had a bag go missing. Never, ever. But I don't know what the state there is in the US, where that's slightly different. Something you've experienced, Jeff?
I've had bags not show up where they're supposed to show up, but I mean, it's few and far between. I have heard horror stories of people flying to Blade Show and then they check their bag, and then, you know, if you put zip ties on the if you put padlocks and zip ties on, I feel like that might be daring TSA to fucking cut them shits loose and see what's going on in that bag. I think if they get x-rayed, they're most likely going to be looked at anyway. I don't know. I could be wrong. The only horror story I remember is one of my guys was bringing down a knife to be reviewed for his ABS certification. And somebody opened it up and put and he wrote a note saying, please don't touch this. This is carbon steel. I don't know what he explained it or not. The guy put a thumbprint on it. And then when he opened up the bag, there was a thumbprint on the knife that he had to refinish for his ABS. So you have to do everything you can within what you can. You can only control what you can control.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of think about things in regards to, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that everything's okay. In regards to people tampering with them, if they're going to tamper, they're going to tamper. I mean, that's the other thing. I would think that that's a very small, minute situation that happens. I think that when baggage gets lost, sometimes it's more likely that it's when you're changing planes and maybe there's a tight,
connection
and maybe it doesn't make the plane or something like that. I wouldn't worry so much about that. In regards to, you're worrying about, you got carbon steel knives, guy fucking grabs it. You might want to bring some, easy repair stuff just in case. And I don't think it happens very often.
Air tags are good. You mentioned air tags. They're good for sort of peace of mind. I've got them in my guitar cases just in case something goes astray. But they're great for peace of mind. They're not that expensive. You can always see where things are. It comes to a point where what will be, unfortunately, isn't it? You know, you can do all you can, but then it's in the lap of the gods.
I would also assume that most of these guys in TSA and airlines, they're way too busy to be fucking around with people's stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the stuff that time that shit happens, I think it's very few and far between.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
The only other thing you can do is if you know someone in Toronto, you can ship them. And I will tell you my experience now in terms of shipping from United States to Canada, UPS has been a godsend. And I learned about really kind of this when Mareko and you and I were talking, when he ships things, he uses a courier service like FedEx or UPS or whatever. because it's a single driver. So if you send something USPS, United States Postal Service, it hits the border and then it goes to their version of USPS.
Got you. It changes carrier. Yeah.
I've now started when they were having some issues with Canadian postal workers where they stopped and I got these messages saying don't put anything in the U.S. mail to Canada. I started using UPS and they take it. You give it to UPS and they take it to the place. So it's always in the possession of UPS, and I think that that's pretty good. So if you were really concerned, if you know someone in Toronto, you could UPS everything to the place that you feel comfortable with, and that might be a good idea too.
Hmm. Wouldn't that be a great idea for show organizers to have that as a service?
Yeah, it would be a great idea because, if you could have like some sort of very safe courier service, you know what are we? We didn't talk about this. I have some friends who go to Burning Man every year, and last year I helped build this fucking crazy Jeep
the back of the truck.
But know what? A lot of people that Burning Man do is they'll be like in Philadelphia, they'll have like a company, and then you basically put all your stuff in this storage container, and the storage container is delivered directly to the playa.
Oh, wow.
So it's a courier service, and it's a drop-off point in this area so people don't have to schlep all this stuff, especially you can't really fly with stoves and stuff because, it's totally illegal.
So they can just post the drugs right to the source. So they just show up and they get their drugs and they're sorted.
Oh,
yeah. Gotcha.
Oh yeah, this fucking storage unit is chocked with drugs. The poor son of a bitch who's got to drive it is like, I mean, he might as well be driving it. the biggest heroin ring of all time is in this fucking truck filled with drugs.
What people are doing over in the UK at the moment? So Oasis have just announced this big reunion.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing this bunch of shows. And most of them in sort of outdoor parks, you know?
Right.
And so what people are doing, they're already going there now, digging holes, putting all their drugs in, and marking it on their phone where it is. So when they go through security on the day of the show, they just go straight over their drugs, dig them back up, and there they go.
I saw a reel of a dude who did that with liquor. And he these people are sitting down, and then this dude kind of walks over with a shovel and then pulls up a bottle of booze out of the ground. They're like, what a goddamn genius. That is unbelievable. I don't know if I'd want dirt drugs, though.
Like, maybe not. Maybe it any drugs.
Well, did you know?
Too old for that.
Speaking of which, did you know at a certain time that most marijuana for a long period of time, a good amount of it, more than 50% of all marijuana that people were smoking had been funneled up someone's ass to get over the border. So there is if you've been smoking weed in the 90s and the early 2000s, there is a very good chance that resided up someone's ass before he smoked
prison
it.
Weed.
No, it's very true. There's a huge amount of people who have smoked weed. They don't realize that it was buried up someone's butt before they
smoking
got it.
Smoking crack.
There you go.
Yes.
You learn a lot on this podcast.
We are. Yeah. We've a curveball. Do you want to take another one? Do you want to tell everybody about your grinder?
Oh, you kidding me? Broadback Ironworks. I was using it just now. We were using it. That's all I grind off of. This is the best grinder that there is. I love the Broadback Ironworks. And I love the fact that it's made in America. It's a small American company. They have awesome customer service, and they're constantly figuring out ways in which to make you a better remover of material. It's not just for knife makers. And they have great new platens. They have all sorts of different types of wheels. Like they have the Matt Stagmer wheel for doing file work. And they have the Mareko platen, which is a deep platen, which is unbelievably good. They have all sorts of new attachments that make your grinder very versatile. And if you go to broadbackironworks.com and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off their packages, all their attachments, all their assortments, all the stuff that they have. So I'm a huge, huge fan of those guys, and it's a great company, and I'm very grateful that they're sponsoring this podcast in general.
Amazing. Okay, what should we do? Should we do a few more questions, or we got to listen to feedback?
We have questions. We also have lots of listener feedback. Whatever you want. we can do whatever.
Let's do some feedback.
All right. So that, yeah. If you want to send us feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. That's where we do all of our that's where we do all of our stuff. We got a lot of good feedback. And feel free to send us some audio feedback. Well, don't send us audio feedback. Send us feedback using audio messages. The first one comes from 9 Point Knives. He sent us a message on Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. He says, "The after show on last podcast had me dying with Craig in the van bricked up with the police banging on the door." So we painted a picture of you.
Yes.
You're now interested in fixing vans up. And we painted the picture of you like waking up in the parking lot of McDonald's with your dick out while people are banging on the door. And he says, "Sincerely, Alexander Ways Bricked." Always bricked. All right. Oh, yeah, this one comes from Anonymous. Oh, man. All right. So we talked about a number of months ago, a guy sent a message in saying he bought an Even Heat, and then his wife sent a message to the home insurance company.
Ah, yes.
The home insurance company went fucking berserk, and he was asking for help, and we talked about a few things. And then we also, last week, we had a guy who had a shop fire and then how insurance handled it. So Anonymous says, "Oh, man, I feel for the guy that had the shop fire. What nightmare fuel. Update, I'm doing it. I'm currently waiting for the invoice for the commercial insurance policy. Thanks for the advice." Mm. So basically what happened was he started to make knives. He got an Even Heat. His wife sent a message to the home insurance, which she was in the right to do. You know, motherfuckers, you don't want them burning down the house. And they lost their minds, and they said that you're going to have to buy a commercial insurance policy on top of your homeowner's insurance. And he was he thought that it was going to be something that was going to make him not enjoy knife making process. So he's going to do it. Luke Dirks says, Luke Dirks last week, wrote Mareko's name wrong, and we kind of broke his balls a little bit. And Luke says, "Damn, I didn't mean to do you dirty like that, Mareko. I apologize." Good job, Luke. That's number one. And he says, "We were talking about bowling, and I came up with the name for our bowling team, the Ball Bags. And finally," neither one of you laughed. You thought I was a three-year-old. And Luke says, "Also, the name Ball Bags had me rolling, LOL." So,
oh, Luke. Grow up.
Luke's my guy, man. Yeah, look, he did the right thing. He apologized like a man, and then he knows a good joke when he hears one. Here's from Mark LeBlanc. Mark LeBlanc is a Canadian. He restores and sharpens knives and axes. He says, "Hi, Knife Talk. I know knife makers like to do paper cuts, paper towel rolls, cuts, and water bottle cut videos are all BS. But to customers of knives or sharpening services, it does get attention and it blows their minds."
Yes. Yeah. It's a weird thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it's going back to the customer's perception of things as opposed to us who sort of live and breathe it. But yeah, it can look quite impressive. Let's be. I think we've all done a water bottle chop.
I mean, it does say something. It's the very easiest way to show sharpness, but it doesn't show performance. Like, you can cut a paper with an axe, but if you try to make dinner with that axe, it'll be a disaster, right? I mean, a sharp axe is going to still. It's not about the performance, but it does. I mean, I cut paper when I send knives out, I cut paper and I'm looking and listening for things. Like, I look at how I try to feel how easy it's going through the paper. And then I listen, cause it does make a difference based on how it cuts. And then I also look at the paper to see if it's ragged or something. And when you get to the point where you can feel if you've gotten it sharp or not, but it's not going to tell you how it performs.
Exactly, yeah. And nothing about durability or edge retention, nothing like that. But it's just a visual aid to show, hey, it's sharp.
Well, I mean, it's good for me. I mean, it helps me for sure. Like, and now I'm on the point where I will use the Tormex, and then I'll use the leather rolling strap, and then maybe I'll fine-tune it. I use the Japanese Waterstone and the Tormex to kind of tune.
Well, if you've got five of them, why not? Why not?
Well, yeah, three of them are in service, and two of them I'm using for other things. But I'm working it out. I mean, I can only do so much. I only have two hands. You know what I'm saying? Two hands and all right.
Three grinders, eight drill presses.
I definitely never mind. But I'm amazed at when you find how I'm amazed at is like if I can see how it cuts and then I can just use the strop a little bit more and then just a little bit of stropping and then you get better sharpness just from that. That those little tiny fine tuning things are really quite amazing. Kitchen knife guy Frankie says, I just finished listening to the last two episodes. Thank you for answering my questions. I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and I want what you advise Jeff are regarding taking a knife making course has been on my radar for years. There's a prominent knife making maker 3 hours south of me, and I'm hoping to be able to visit for a course over the next year, especially as you mentioned, enhance my knowledge of how these tools are made. Both out of user curiosity and because it will bleed into my kitchen knife knowledge. Thanks for the tip. Well, you've taken classes, haven't you? You've taken some sort of classes.
I've done one or two. Yes, I think particularly in this situation where the guy is becoming an expert in his field. To the consumer. Right. He's the expert. He's telling them all about these knives. I think, it's perfectly right that he should, at least know the basics, I think, so he can back up the claims and explain why things are the way they are. I think it's a great thing for him to do.
It's interesting because he and I talked a little bit, and obviously, we talked about Frankie's a good dude. It's not just going to bleed into... It's going to inform how you speak about knives.
Yeah.
Like when you kind of understand, like perfect example is heat treatment. Like people when they understand, I remember when I first started knife making, I would hear Bob Kramer talk about austenite, martensite, and I hated science. I hated it. But at the same time, I knew that I needed to figure out a way to understand what comes first. And once you realize what comes from, okay, you bring the steel to the critical temperature, iron carbide's going to solution, and then, Frankie, listen to the, get ready for this. So the iron carbide's going to solution, then you quench it. So you're creating austenite, the critical temperature, iron carbide's going to solution, and that's the austenite stage. And then you're quenching it, whether it be in oil or between plates, like for stainless steel, and then you're cooling it down at a specific rate where the iron carbides turn into like this crystal structure. And then that's hardening based off of each individual steel. Then what the tempering does is it takes some of the, hardness, the brittleness out, and then it makes it more flexible, but it also makes it stronger.
Durable.
Yeah. You're going to have to figure out a way to kind of understand this stuff. And then once you realize, and I'm going to do, I know I've done this a million times, I'm going to do it again, it's been a while. How I describe it is, if you've ever made creme brulee, you have a pocket of pudding or custard, and then you sprinkle sugar on top. You think about the sugar as the iron carbides, then you take a torch, and then you put a torch to the sugar. Now, when you sprinkle the sugar on, it has no connections, very much like you're annealed steel. Then when you bring the torch, there's a critical temperature where the sugar all melts, all those crystals melt into a puddle, and then you would think that would be austenite. You're creating a solution, and then as it cools, it transforms from a solution to a crystal structure, which goes from austenite to martensite. I figured that out, and it was the easiest way for me to understand it, but also to explain it to other people. And then it's so brittle that, your spoon goes through it. Well, with a knife, you can't be, breaking things on the floor and stuff like that. So you temper it to kind of harden it or make it tougher, make it more flexible, but also be able to be flexible as opposed to being brittle. Yeah. Once you start to learn these things, it's going to lead you to understand, why is this happening to me? I wonder why. Why is this too hard? Why do you think it's too hard? Why do you think, once you get a better understanding of how these things work, it'll inform you on how you perceive knives in general.
And you'll get the intent behind design as well, of, why they've chosen to do that and why it may help, or maybe because of the constrictions that they have in their workshop. So they've had to do it that way, but you'll understand the reasons the design is the way it is.
And yeah. And also, Frankie, last thing, you don't have to take a kitchen knife class. That's a big mistake that a lot of people who want to make knives, they go straight into, even if it's forging or stock removal, they go straight to kitchen knives. That's not going to be as helpful as for understanding, because there is so much more involved in terms of grinding and geometry and stuff like that. To get the basics down, you want to take an introductory class. You go to the New England School of Metalwork. I know that there's a lot of guys in I would suggest going to Can Iron. Can Iron isn't going to be in August. It's an event in Canada. It's one of the biggest events in Canada for blacksmiths and bladesmiths. Can Iron, Can Iron, Can Iron. You should definitely go to Can Iron. But less is more. Go simple and get a better understanding, and then it will inform how you look at knives in a completely different way, and it's for your best. And I am with this guy. Said enough.
Fair enough. Okay, well, I can tell everybody about MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Lawrence is a good dude. I know he listens to the show. But yeah, he's got everything in stock that we talk about, basically, and so much, so much more. Always got deals on belts, where you get 10% off and a 10-pack, that kind of thing. Really is like the one-stop shop for knife makers, because they've got steel, they've got belts, then you go on to handle materials and the tools that you need, even forges and kilns. Got it all. Rhino wet, rhino stick, all that kind of stuff as well. All good, good stuff. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Go take a look. Also, Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. So go give Lawrence a follow there as well. And, you'll see the kind of stuff that they sell. Lots of, like, cool, handy little gadgets that's going to make your life so much easier, as well as all the usual staples that we all need anyway.
And thanks to Lawrence, I'll be down at Blade Show for the Saturday.
Aha, aha.
So come say
aha.
Hello.
When is Blade now?
I don't know. Sometime in June. I don't know. Okay. I forgot. Soon-ish. I don't know the name. Soon-ish. Yeah, but I'll be down there thanks to Maritime Knife Supply.
Amazing. Amazing.
We have a couple more time-sensitive feedbacks.
Okay.
This one's directed to you. Last week, you were talking about the fact that you have some warped blades in your...
Yeah, well, I did. They're sorted now, thankfully.
Oh, well... There's a suggestion. You haven't sorted, but we'll read the suggestion anyway. And I want to hear about how you fixed it. Yes, Leonardo sure. Lee, our friend Leonardo Lee, says an obvious answer to Craig's bent knives is to turn them all the knives around in the box and put them back in the barn for another 2 years.
Easy. Another 2 years.
Easy.
Great suggestion.
That was a great suggestion. How did you fix them?
Well, I tried just sort of twerking them,
yeah,
and just bending slightly, but I didn't have the courage.
Yeah,
didn't have the courage. So I thought, let's fire up the even heat, and just shim temper. So using a penny to go back against the bend, so you're sort of overcompensating, as if you're bending them back, but you're overcompensating, and just do another temper cycle, and they've all come out great. No problem at all. So yeah, they're all good. And good to go. Pleased with that.
Shim tempering is like the unsung best way to take a warp out of a knife. It is amazing.
Yeah. I do need to refinish them.
All right, well.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, it's not a big
deal. No, because you didn't make any marks, so you didn't make any big...
Exactly. Money. Yeah. No. Yeah, no, that's the way to do it in my book. Particularly with sort of finished blades.
Right.
As I said, you're not making any sort of marks to them. You know, we talked about using, you know, straightening hammers and all that kind of stuff. I think if it had to finish state on what is quite a thin blade anyway, a shim taper, it may take a little bit more time. It just seems to work.
That's the key. It's the shim temper versus the carbide hammers. There's pros and cons to both. The carbide hammers, and if you go to KH Daily Knives, I know he has carbide straightening hammers. Our friend Kyle has straightening hammers. I know that Maritime Knife Supply probably has straightening hammers. There are places. And if you're in Australia, our friends down in Gamaco, if you're in Australia, our friends at Gamaco have straightening hammers. That's for you, Ronald. Tell Corin I said hello. So the interesting thing between the carbide straightening hammers, and I use the carbide straightening hammer today. I was grinding a offset serrated knife, and there was a little bit of warp in it, but I knew that I had some more grinding to do, and I knew that I could get the dimples out, and I brought it over to the anvil. I had the carbide straightening hammer, and the key is you got to do it where the where it would, if it cups, if it's cupping, you want the cup up. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So yeah. So you flatten it back down.
You'd think because you know if you're forging a knife, and it's bowed, you'd think, all right, just put it down on the bow and then hit the bow. But no, with the carbide straightening hammer, you want it cup up. And then I knew that I had enough material to take off that I would get rid of any of the dimples. But the key is I always, if I'm using the carbide straightening hammer on a ground blade where it's already on the thin side, I stay the fuck away from the edge. Because that bow, you can get that bow if you just take it out towards the spine. Because I did try to do that on an edge once, and I just cracked the shit out of it. So those carbide straightening hammers are awesome as long as you have enough material to fix them. But the shim temper, I've shim tempered a knife maximum maybe 10 times because I couldn't get one warp out of it. This years ago. But I was like, I mean, it's as long as you're not going over your original temperature, then you're not changing anything. And we had Laren Thomas on a while ago, and he said that there's no ill effect as long as you're not going above your original temperature.
Yeah.
And then the last one that's time sensitive comes from Ronald Handmade down in Australia. My guy works for Gamaco. He says, I see the quote, do I need heat treatment stainless question come up again and again. Last week, our man asked if he was going to make a set of cake knives, and he wanted to use AEBL, yes. And he wanted to know if he had to heat treat it. And I said, who gives a shit? And you know, so yeah. I mean, I basically made a point that those cheap ass motherfuckers weren't going to pay you. So I was like, who gives a shit? Michael Bergfalk. And he says, yes, non-heat treated stainless steel. This is Ronald. Non-heat treated stainless steel is in the wrong structure to properly resist rust. AEBL, 12C27, and Nitro V can all be heat treated pretty easily in a decent forge. Just do it and don't be lazy. All right, you didn't have to say that, Ronald. Don't call him lazy. You didn't get paid, Ronald. The guy was a freebie. Don't call him lazy. Jesus Christ, Ronald. Michael, don't worry. I got you, my guy. Ronald, take it easy. Take it easy. And he goes, in response, and that, you know, so you know what Ronald does? I know this because he sends me messages. He'll be listening in the car, and then I think he'll voice transcribe his questions, and then just like, he'll send a pile to me, and I got to like figure out what it is. So this is the next response.
Like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah. He's actively responding while he's listening, which is like, but I think he thinks we're talking to him. Ronald, I have a question for you, Ronald. You got to turn left right here, okay? Just
red light, Ronald.
So he says, and in response to the when do I call myself a knife maker question, that was last week, somebody asked, when do I call myself a knife maker? He says, if you and your partner have ever had an argument about how, quote, all you ever do when you're home is make knives, then you're a knife maker. If the argument involves mentioning that you don't contribute enough to the housework, then you're definitely a knife maker. So that was pretty good, Ronald. Ronald, here's my stop. Let me off here. All right, that was good.
Do you know what you could do, Michael could do?
Go ahead.
Imagine a cake set made out of Dharma steel.
Oh, baby.
Now we're talking.
Big time.
Now we're talking. If it's for a wedding, too, break out the good stuff. That's what I say. Dharma steel is, beautiful, beautiful stainless Damascus-type steel. Beautiful, beautiful patterns. And they've got them all listed on the website there, dharmasteel.se. Also, take a look at Dharma Steel AB on Instagram. You'll see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Always beautiful, high-end stuff. So if you're thinking about making something special, go get some Dharma Steel. Far easier to use than you would imagine, and we can get you a discount too. So when you make your purchase and you've got your account open there, just use Knife Talk at the checkout as a promo code, and you'll get 10% off your order too. Dharmasteel.se. And stay tuned. We did say we can do it this week, but I've been away, so I haven't got my shit together. But next week, we can tell you all about the next build along, how you can get involved, and also about the Chef Invitational. Again, how you can get involved with that. Doors will be open.
I have the email if you want me to read it, or we'll wait for next.
Go for it. Go for it. If you're prepared, go for it.
When Carly sends emails, I always look at them. Let me just find it. Oh, here we go. Okay, here we go, guys. The Build Along. We're so excited about this year's Build Along. It will go live April 7th, the day the show comes out. That's the day that this podcast comes out on April 7th. To celebrate our 30th year, we'll be releasing the Build Along in a special format. Foot-long bar of RWL34 to create a culinary blade. And then there's a bonus of a 2x2 by quarter, that's 50 millimeters by 50 millimeters by 70 millimeters, of Heimskringla. To create an accompanying piece or feature to the culinary knife. Let your imagination go crazy. It could be attached, but it must be included in the picture. So that's the prizes and awards. There's going to be this is a big deal. Prizes and awards. There's the Knife Talk Choice. There's Pairs Choice. And we have a very special judge. Craig, did you know?
Who's that?
Alfredo Facipieri. Alfredo Facipieri is joining as a judge to best the best mirror polish blade. Amazing. Can you believe it?
He's worked his way in, Alfredo. He turned up with some pasta one day. And now he's getting a paycheck.
Oh my God. Alfredo is judge. He's the best mirror polish blade. And as usual, take one amazing photograph of your final work and send it to dci@damasteel.com before Halloween. All right, before Halloween. Then they're also going to be a blade show, and they want to. And Mareko and I are probably going to be hanging out with them from 1 to 2 at the Damasteel. I'm going to read this because Carly's hilarious. Drinks for everyone except for Mareko. I think Mareko like spit or like got. Like some sort of drink all over somebody. And we'll promote it on the channels. They want to make a Knife Talk / Damasteel Carhartt t-shirt for the show. They're asking you if you can send a vector file of your logo or the font. And that's it. So Carly's all in. She listens intently to this podcast. So what we'll do is we'll have more information, but the big thing is April 7th, the hashtag buildalong will go live. So start making your knives, reach out to Damasteel, get your steel. I don't know where you're going to be getting it this year. I would imagine we will have more information on that. And there you go. Said it all. Perhaps
Amazing.
I said too much.
Amazing. Perhaps too much once again. Okay. So you go back to a few questions?
Yes.
Let me do a couple. Okay. Okay, where
Dustin Sheffield.
Dustin Sheffield, again on Instagram, we are Knife Talk Podcast, got the questions over. He says, last episode, y'all were talking about how razor thin some makers go with a kitchen knife. He said, well, my first Damascus knife, 333 layers, was made, and I didn't know how thin was too thin. So thin, my fingernail deflected the edge. That's pretty thin, right? Well, of course, the first thing I cut with it has to be really important. So my son got his first deer, and I thought, hot damn, I'll help him be the butcher with that knife. This guy lives a completely different life to me.
Yeah.
My God.
You've never even heard of a deer.
Is that like Rudolph?
Not a reindeer. They eat deer over here. You know that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just
kidding. We did too. Yeah. Okay, so now it's closer to a serrated knife. Thanks, for a well-deserved lesson in knife making. He must have snagged that thin edge on some bones. It was just all jagged.
We were talking last week about, you know, you see these knife makers and they'll put the edge up against their fingernail and then they'll show that kind of like, it like moves a little bit. And I think I actually had a conversation with David, Tiger Claw Customs, who works here, and we were talking about it, and he says that they're good, and I said, I think that they're not good. And do you have any points about that? Or
Again, like we said last week, it depends on the purpose of the knife, I think. If you're making a sushi knife where things need to be ultra fine, you know, that's all good. If you're cutting a chicken carcass, you want something a bit right. stouter. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting conversation talking with David about it because I was saying he's a former chef and he understands knives and stuff like that. And he was saying that, you know, if the user understands how to sharpen things, you know, has a good understanding of it, then it's great. And my opinion was when I make my knives, I also not only think about when they originally go out, but they're how they're going to be managed over time. And this is something that I don't get, you know, problems where stuff is coming back and I got problems with the, big sharpening issues and nothing like that. And a lot of that's because I leave a little bit more material on it so the user can grow with it. When you do those razor blade edges, especially if someone's sharpening incorrectly and there's too much is taken out, it turns it into a disaster for maintenance because the average person might not be able to understand how to remove material off the edge to make it even the whole way. You might end up with like a dip, you know. So I always think that those things are great, and it definitely shows how something's going to be out of the box. But how is that going to be over 5 years?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think that that's one thing that a lot of knife makers, you know, they make these beautiful objects and they look amazing out of the box. But how is it going to perform over the time with a potentially very lazy owner?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that goes down to even aesthetics as well, you know, handle materials. Sometimes we make these beautiful, shiny handles. They've been buffed up. How's that going to look in 3 months' time?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking one episode when you were here and Mareko had a real problem because, like, he had a knife that went to a place that was very humid and the handle material swelled a little bit, but the brass spacer didn't, and he had to repair it. And he had to basically take the handle apart. And that is something to be thought of, especially because, like, especially with some guy, I mean, Mareko's knives are exquisite. And they're worth the value that they are. But when somebody pays that kind of money, if something's going wrong, you know, they're going to write them back. You know, they're going to say, hey, you got to take care of this.
Yeah.
And that's part of this business, too, is, like, one of the reasons why I love G10, well, number one reason is I fucking love the color. But I don't have to worry about it changing, you know, and how things are taken care of over time is out of your control.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you're right. Yeah. And yeah, using materials like G10 will, almost guarantee that things will stay that sort of tip top condition, I suppose.
Or making a...
But again, it's about education as well a lot of the time. So let's say you're working with a customer on something. Let's say it's something custom, and they say, you know what, I want to have this particular wood and whatever. I think it's up to us, particularly if we're taking custom orders, to sort of have those conversations, because the last thing you want to happen is, as I say, 3 or 4 months down the line, it ends back on your desk, you know?
And then, and then there's also the thought of, and this is something that we make jokes about customers sometimes, and part of me gets very concerned that some of us are having what I'm referring to as adversarial relationships with their customers. I'm in a position now where I get a lot of repeat business. So I get fired up when I get new business because it really is dynamite for me. And if I know that I get a lot of repeat business, it's great. When you start to demand too much from your customers, they might be less likely to work with you in the future. And especially in times like now where people are being very careful about their money and they decide they need to get something and you're on the top of their list, that makes a huge difference. Like I've said this before, I got one customer who I got because someone had terrible customer service. I'm almost up to 10 grand with this guy. And it means a lot and I appreciate him. And it's one of those things where, you know, it makes a huge difference. And if I were to just be a dick to my customer, you shouldn't have done it this way. It's not my fault. You're not on the top of the list anymore. You're on the you're like, I'm not going to give you any business. So it's a tricky spot. You know, when you're in the business, you really have to start to think about your customers. how your product is going to work over time, and then how you're going to manage it. You can't be one of these guys to be like, well, it's not my problem anymore. That is like the last time you're going to see that customer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's that thing, isn't it? It's a lot more cost effective to sell more to a customer. Oh. It's that acquisition of a customer that costs money. Once if you can do a good job, getting more out of the, getting more out of the customer.
It is true.
Getting more orders.
You're creating a relationship, and then it goes from a customer to a client. And, I have customers like I'm doing the New York City Marathon and I'm raising money.
When is that book? Because wasn't there something the other day? Or was that the half?
No, there was a half marathon in New York, but I don't know if you were here when I talked. I got into the New York City Marathon.
Yeah, I did see. Yeah, I wasn't here
and,
for sure.
And I got to raise money for the thing. And we decided, let's put it in the newsletter. I had a lot of my customers who were very generous to spend money on this race, and it was like you're creating a good vibe with your customers, and I think it's important to think about them in regards to how you make your knives. There are tons of people who are just like, I make it and you buy it, and that's the end of our relationship. Yeah. I mean, if you can afford to live like that, then God bless you. But if you think that you can only be in business with one person and that's it, then you're going to have to work your fucking ass off to find new customers. It's way harder to find new customers than it is to hold on to the ones that you have.
Yeah.
I'm not saying to,
That was said a lot more eloquently than the way I said it. But
sometimes I have my moments.
You do. You do. Let me tell everybody about Texas Farrier Supply. .com. They've been with us for years as a sponsor, and we only work with sponsors that we use and we appreciate the service that they give, and they are great because they've got everything you need, including Indasa Rhino-Wet, and we've been banging on about these for years now because we all have to do some hand sanding and none of us particularly enjoy doing it, but using Indasa Rhino-Wet will make it easier. So head on over to texasfarriersupply.com. Have a good look at everything they do. They've got a farrier section, a bladesmith section, and they've got everything you could possibly need, including Rhino-Wet. Fill up your basket and you can get 10% off.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
10% off, which is huge, by using Knife Talk 10 at checkout. So head on over to texasfarriersupply.com.
I just used it. I just got a message from Evan. I just used it. I just used it this week. I got some Rhino-Wet from Evan. He's great. And I like supporting our sponsors.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we do. I mean, we genuinely do. We all the sponsors that we have on board, we have them because we like what they do. This isn't, us just trying to, get you to spend money where we wouldn't. All of our sponsors we genuinely love. So, head on over to texasfarriersupply.com.
The next one is from Opal Knives. Opal Knives says, hey, fellas, I have a heat treat / cryo question. I read somewhere on a forum that I had not heard before. Blades do not actually need to be fully submerged in liquid nitrogen. They only need to be below the level of the cork. As the liquid nitrogen makes the ambient temperature inside the dewar the same temperature as the liquid nitrogen itself. If true... would that mean you could get away with very little volume of liquid nitrogen in your tank and still successfully treat your blades? True or bullshit? Thanks. Erection. Erection.
I don't know, but with regards to the second part of the question, could you just have a little bit of nitrogen, in the dewar? Obviously, it's not going to last in huge spaces. It's not going to fill up the whole space with that low temperature. Otherwise, we'd all just be using one little dot of the stuff. It's going to depend on volumes there. But I always assumed it would need to be submerged to get that full temperature.
I don't necessarily think so, only because I know that, if my longest knife is like 13 inches, it's not necessarily all going to be under there over time. But when I pull it out, regardless, I can tell when it's getting low, and then I'll even sometimes, when it's very low, I'll lay it down. I'll put the knives in, I'll lay it down on its side so it's underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
But the times where I can't tell if it's fully submerged, because you can't like see inside the door to see where your levels are. But when I do pull them out, even if there's just a little bit left, I notice that when I pull them out, they all kind of equalize this the same way. It's not like there's a line of where it's in or not.
Okay.
I have also, and I don't know if this is a popular opinion or not, I have also used my freezer to cryo when I was out. I was heat treating and I was completely out. And I used my freezer and I left them in the freezer overnight. And I checked the rock well and I was getting the same measurements that I was getting when I was using liquid nitrogen.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
So I've done lots of sub-zero stuff. That will help a bit. But from my understanding is liquid nitrogen is obviously so much colder
right. That
you get the extra benefits of that. But particularly a lot of stainlesses really do help with just a sub-zero. So just literally put them in the freezer.
I think that liquid nitrogen is a little bit easier to kind of keep for a while than like dry ice. I can't get dry ice. So I know that my liquid nitrogen lasts a few months if I'm smart on how I use it. Like I just finished doing all the heat treating, so I don't have to heat treat for a while. And we got a lot. I got over 100 knives out of a doer, but I mean, I also was heat treating maybe 10 a day. So I think that the doer is great because it allows you to hold on to liquid nitrogen for a longer period of time, as opposed to having to go get dry ice when you need it. Because I don't even know how you would store dry ice. I might be wrong. I have no idea. I have some stainless steels don't need cryo. Like I know 440C doesn't need cryo. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's so fucking hard. I mean, it's like you need like, I mean, it's insanely hard. I know that AEBL does well with cryo. But I have used the freezer of the ice part of the freezer, and I have gotten passable results. I think the key is to try it out. But having a Rockwell tester just to kind of like double check is very important. But also, I mean, before I had a Rockwell tester, I used to test my blades by just flexing them to see if they flex back. If I flexed them and then they stayed bent, I knew it wasn't working. Actually, that's how I got a doer in the first place. I'd gotten some AEBL. I was told you don't need cryo. There are certain steels, like certain damaged steels don't need cryo, and they give you the right temperatures and stuff to kind of deal with these if you don't have cryo. And I remember getting a thing of cryo. I didn't get the cryo, but I heat treated the knives, and I was flexing them, and they were staying bent. And that's when I talked to the New Jersey Steel Baron guy. Says, go get yourself a doer. I had a doer I got from Rick Dunkerley and I got it filled. And I said, that's why I started using it. But it is amazing how cryo affects for a benefit. It's a benefit, especially the thin stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Right. Okay. Shall we call it
a
day?
Let's fuck around.
Okay. Let's fuck around. So here we go. We're done. Okay.
You got to do a little abrupt, take the knob off.
Oh,
that's my fucking favorite one.
Let's find it.
Yeah.
Tune it in, turn it up, and rip off the knob.
I can listen to that 100 times. I literally think that is the funniest thing ever.
Tune it in. So what have you been up to? What are you watching, listening to? I've got a recommendation for you.
Oh, good. I could use a recommendation. You know, I say...
Really? Oh. Now, it's a Netflix show, but I'm not sure if it'll be on US because it's a very British thing. So I don't know if you've got a VPN
no.
So you can get British Netflix. You haven't? Oh, come on.
I'm on. I'm really bad.
It's called Adolescence. It's like the biggest show in the UK here. It's a three-parter. 3 50-minute episodes. Really sort of gritty drama. But the best thing about each one was shot with one camera in one take.
Huh.
And it's incredible what they managed to do. I've seen lots of sort of behind-the-scenes footage now of how they did a lot of this. And it's like a dance. So for each episode, basically, they'd have a week of rehearsals for each episode. Then they'd have a week of filming. So they do the full thing twice a day over five days. So they'd then have 10 versions and they'd literally just pick the best one. There's no editing, splicing together. It was all one take with one. It's incredible. But the story itself and the acting is just, it's the best thing I've seen in years. Really is. But I'm not sure if it'll translate so well in the US because it's very, very British. And it's that sort of gritty, sort of almost a documentary style. It's, It's incredible, incredible. So if you can get over there, it's called Adolescence.
I've heard about it. I've heard of it. I think David was telling me about it, and he was saying the same thing as his one take stuff. It sounds amazing. Yeah.
Incredible, incredible. And there's, yeah, there's stuff where like the camera then flies off, you know, and you're thinking, how the hell have they done that? And when you watch the behind the scenes, there's people behind, and they're clipping a drone to it as they're filming, and off it goes. It's just amazing, wow. Amazing. Yeah. So it's one of those things, you watch it, and half the time you're sort of thinking, how are they doing that? And your mind is thinking about, you know, how are they doing it? But the actual story and the acting is so good that it just brings you back, and you forget about that again. It's so, so good. So this little kid in it is just unbelievable.
I'm going to need some listening recommendations, because I'm doing a lot of running these days. I'm reading this. I'm training differently for the marathon, but I hate to do this. I can't listen to a lot of these maker podcasts. I dip in and out. I say I don't listen anymore because I don't want to be influenced anymore. But then I dip in and out, and for some reason,
angers you.
Well, I'll tell you why it angers me. Because my name or this podcast comes up, like if you listen to Knife Talk, and then they'll say something stupid like, oh, I don't listen to that. Or like they'll use our name and then play dumb, you know, or they'll say my name and then play dumb. And part of me is just like, don't fucking say my name. It winds me up because it's just like, bro, we were here before you and we'll be here after you. You know, it's like, I mean, we're your daddy. You know, it's like, show some fucking respect. But I get that. I've got
respect. I mean, it's not a competition.
No, but I mean, I get messages like, oh, these guys talked about you. And then they'll say my name and then they'll say my name and then they'll just be kind of like, you know, baby shit. It's like, I'm not your girlfriend from high school. You know, it's just like, don't pull on my fucking pigtails. I'm going to just nuke you. And I don't want to nuke you. But it's hard for me to listen to new podcasts. I need some new recommendations because I'm kidding, obviously. Don't send me any audio messages, you podcasters. That's all you fucking do. I'm not going to listen to it. So that's number two. But I'm doing much more cross-fitting stuff. I'm running a couple days a week. I got plenty of time before I start really hard training. I'm trying to shape the rust off. So I ran three days this week.
So what are you doing? You're going to sort of build up to the date?
There are these systems in place. I use a system in place where it's basically like 20 weeks of training to get you there, which I have way more than 20 weeks. And I think that I use that. I think that I overtrained. I think that's one of the reasons why my knees were too bad. And I wasn't counting, you know, you're supposed to count the miles on your shoes. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Your sneakers are not meant to be like forever. Like you have a certain amount of miles.
Damage your feet. Yeah.
So I'm working with there's a great running store in a town near me, and I've been friendly with the owner, and I'm going to be getting, you know, talking to them and getting stuff from them using local companies instead of buying from Amazon. And then I have to come up with a training program, and now I'm just trying to get out there. Just trying to get out there and just do ring rust stuff. It's a little too cold for me, and I don't really want to get hurt, but I did last week, and I ran 4 miles. And every day I walk probably about – between walking and running, I probably put in like 5 to 6 miles a day. And then I've been doing like – I've been running in the mornings, and then I, you know, do some Peloton too and bike ride just to kind of change things up. But I would like to listen to something interesting, and if anyone has any suggestions – non-maker related. I can't handle it. I can't handle when my name comes up. I fucking gets me crazy.
I'm just looking at my list of my subscribed podcasts now, and I'm basically a middle-aged lady. It's all true crime and that kind of stuff.
I think, I gotta figure something out. And I did listen back in, you know, 12 years ago, I was listening to Joe Rogan, and it was great because it's 3-hour fucking thing. So you're going a long run, and you can just kind of like doze off. But I don't know if I can handle that anymore.
I can't. I can't listen to that anymore. No.
Well, it's a little too bro-y for me.
Have you been fitted for shoes? Are you going for a proper fitting? You know, the custom things done.
No, but I have a pair of sneakers that I like right now. But I'm gonna go when I kind of run these guys down. I'm gonna go to the store, and they're gonna put me in a couple things. But I went down there with my friend who goes there all the time, and he's constantly buying shoes. And I've become, like I said, I've been friendly with the owner, and the owner's said she'd take care of me. So we'll figure something out.
Did I tell you about the time when I was doing park runs a few years ago? And I used to get bad knees when I first started. And everybody said you need to go for a custom fitting, right, you know, for shoes. Did I tell you about that? So I go in, and you know, they put you on this like this treadmill, and it like it knows where you're running and it like your gait and all the rest of it. Anyway, so before I had the chance to go on this thing, I'm looking at all the shoes and that one's cool. That one that looks really nice. That looks really cool. So in my head, I'm thinking, right, yeah, I know which ones I'm gonna get. I think, you know. So they put me on this machine now, right? And I said it measures, you know, how you put your feet down and all. It does it all. So that you get this report at the end. And he's like, right then, I'll suggest some shoes for you. So I'm thinking, here we go, I'm going to pick the cool ones. He had to go up the back to find, like, the special shoe, you know, where one has got, like, a... it's, like, 3 inches higher than the other
one. I'm the exact same way. The ones that I got when I did the same thing 12 years ago, if you look at the picture of me in the New York City Marathon, I am, because I have pronation, so I don't have, like, a good arch, I got flat feet. These are the worst looking shoes you've ever seen in your life. I mean, they're terrible. They're big and they're dumb and they sucked. And I hated wearing them. And I was just like, and that's exactly this. I was exactly the same. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want those cool ones. And then we'll get those special laces and all this shit. I'm like, they gave me like podiatry shoes, you know, like fucking podiatry.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've got. Yeah, yeah.
And I look so lame. I look so stupid. Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. So you've got months and months to go then, basically.
Yeah, it's the first week of November. So I'm I think that the most important thing is I just don't want to overtrain. And I mean, like, I feel good when I'm out there, and I know that I feel good after 2 miles. Like last week I ran 4 miles and I looked like shit, but I felt pretty good. And so I need to just like build up slowly, and I had done the marathon, like I said, 12 years ago, and I'm actually going to do a beginner's way of this specific guy trains, and I don't feel the need to have to be like better than I want to run comfortably through the whole 26 miles.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy it and finish strong. Yeah. Yeah. Is your wife doing it with you?
Fuck no. Yeah. No? It's just, she just doesn't, I mean, she runs, but she doesn't want to do that kind of heat. I mean, she doesn't want to do that. I'm doing it halfway out of spite. You know, it's like, and the last week's episode of Full Blast Podcast, I did a whole thing on why I did it, you know, what's going on. So if you want a little bit more marathon talk, it's on Full Blast Podcast.
To the New York Marathon, is it like the London one where people dress up?
Well, it's the weekend after Halloween, so there are people who are in Halloween costumes.
We can get you dressed up as a Kel, Even Heat Kel. They'll sponsor
you,
right?
Yeah.
Well, you can be dressed up as an Even Heat LB22. Yeah, and
that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Or what else should I? Hey, listen, Damasteel, if you wanna get like Damasteel leggings for me. I'll wear Damasteel leggings. Carly, get on that. I'll wear like
with a Borkin twist on it.
Yeah, Borkin twist. I'll wear tights. I'll wear tights, Damasteel tights. That's for sure. Feel free. Hey, listen to our sponsors listening to this.
You're going to be like an F1 car. Oh, you're going to have these sponsors from the top of your head down.
I'm talking to all of our sponsors right now. If you want in, you got it. All you have to do is you got to go to
Tomac across your arm.
I would do that. I'm taking spot. You go to Fader Knives and you go to the bio and you click on it. You donate to the show. I will 100%. I mean, it's got to be, you know.
Okay, we got this, right? $500 for a sponsor and you'll wear it.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Some, yeah. 100%. $500?
This is the start of it. Okay, you are going to be like a Formula One.
I will 100% either have I will have something. If you put $500 in as a sponsor, I will have I'll have some sort of tag on there.
We've got some listeners with money. We know we've got listeners with money. Are you telling us, right, for $500 you'd have whatever?
No, whatever.
Put on your t-shirt.
Whatever. I'll be wearing the Michael J. Fox Foundation shirt. But if you put in $500 into my race, I will for sure wear some sort of sponsorship, something or other. Even if it's a hat or something like that.
Okay. So that's good. That's good. Get in touch, everyone. Right, with that, it's the weekend. Should we get out of here?
I got something to tell you, but after show.
Off show. Okay. Right, speak to you all next week. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.